Good morning, and welcome to the second day of the Joint Technical Symposium. I'm still a bit moved after Liv Ullmann's speech yesterday. I would say with friends like that, it'll be hard for us to fail. Today we have another excellent list of speakers. To start the morning, we have Nadja Velasković from the Austrian Phonogrammarchiv. Nadja, please.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm sorry for my voice. My voice is not very good this morning, but I hope you will be able to understand me. So my speech today will be about metadata. And metadata. But before you decide to fall asleep again, let me tell you these are some special metadata. But let's start in the beginning. Oskar Sala, he lived from 1910 to 2002, was a German musician, a scientist, and a composer. And he was a pioneer of electronic music. He played and further developed the trautonium, a predecessor to the synthesizer. By developing and modifying this instrument, Sala was able to create totally new sounds and effects and, as anticipated, a lot of well-established film sounds and musical expressions. He composed the scores for more than 300 films and created the effect soundtrack for Alfred Hitchcock's film The Birds. So the birds are not natural, they are artificial birds created by Sala, because natural birds would have sounded too boring. And he received many awards for his works. After his death, he left, amongst others, a collection of about 1,200 analog magnetic audio tapes, which you can see in his studio in the backside. And these tapes are stored in the archives of the German Museum, Deutsches Museum in Munich. The collection is now being digitized, financed by KUR. This is a program for the conservation of movable cultural assets and under the consultancy of the Phonogrammarchiv Vienna. So, how did we start this project? The first thing is always to make a survey and have a look. I started with having a look at the recording devices because I wanted to know which formats and which parameters would come along. So Oskar Sala used only professional quarter-inch tape recorders from AEG Telefunken, and all of the machines showed the oxide out layer winding direction, so B-wind. They were equipped with mono full-track or butterfly heads, and his devices were stemming from the 1940s up to the 1960s. So the earliest tape recorder he owned is an AEG magnetophone type B2, which was constructed in the middle of the 1940s, even a little earlier. And his machine, I guess, is from towards the end of the 1940s. This machine alone would be a speech of its own. His youngest machine is a Telefunken magnetophone M5B, from about 1967, 1968. So this was the latest machine Sala used. So therefore, we knew something about his original recorders. Some are in non-playable condition, so there are lots of missing parts, like the head block, as you see here, and other things. Incomplete setup. And lots of manual labels and markings you can find on his machine. So you see the first metadata, which should be captured. And possibly he individually modified the machines because they have a lot of individually modified circuits in the paper sheet of Oskar Sala. But as he worked for professional film studios and for professional recording studios, it can be assumed that the parameters for the playback of the collection follows more or less the standard of the particular equipment generation. So this is the basis where the collection, the replay of the collection started. for example, equalization. The tape speeds provided by the recorders are mainly 38 centimeters, but also 76 centimeters up to 77 until 100 centimeters, because the Tonschreiber B2 was constructed in two versions. One was for 100 centimeters and the second one was for 77 centimeters. And also 19 centimeters, and only one machine provided 9.5 centimeters. So the most, the greater part of the collection should be recorded with 38 centimeters. But yes, to complicate matters, Sala had a device to control the playback length without changing pitch, an analog time stretching module. It's called the Acoustic Time Organizer, and it looks like this. They did not know what it was, and I had a look at the machines, and then I found out how it works. So there is an article in the Gravesana Blätter from Mr. Springer, an acoustischer Zeitregler, an acoustic time organizer, and the tape is fed into the tape path, or the device is fed into the tape path, and by having a rotating head drum with more playback heads, you can stretch the sound without changing pitch, or you can shorten it. So some other playback parameters. Due to the characteristics of the recordings, these are mostly electronic sounds, noises, and so on, the tape speed is very often not easy to determine a priori, because there exists no written documentation. Helpful analyses. Well, your ears. One idea is to listen to the audio contents and try to identify and recognize signals. But this is not very easy if you have a sound like this, for example. So which speed should it be played back? Another method is to analyze the hum of the power supply, which is sometimes problematic because the artificially generated signals are masking this power supply hum, and then you cannot find it out. Or another method, which looked quite the analysis of the high-frequency bias signal, which is recorded on the tape. Some years before, I told you something about the limitations of the magnetic head, the preamplifier of the tape recorder, and the sampling frequency due to the wavelength phenomenon in magnetic recording process, so this is not always possible for each of the tapes. Very often the parts have been recorded on different tape machines and then assembled individually. And he wanted them to be played back with one speed. So tape speed is something very flexible in Oskar Sala's collection, and therefore the analysis of the bias signal is also not a real help. But how does it look like? This is one tape that plays best with the best estimated speed from 38 centimeters, and what you see, the lines in the very upper region of the picture, is the different parts from, he cut together from two different machines parts, and they should be played back with 38 centimeters standard. Now, let's come to the tapes. This is the really interesting part. The tapes are in a basically comparatively good storage condition, but there is a countless number of separation tapes and splices, which higher the risk of dropping the tape back, and there is a risk of bleeding splices and combination for the tape. So the splices might come loose and break while spooling the tape, and this needs then a time-consuming physical restoration. So the tapes look like this, for example, and sometimes it looks like this, and then you have to rewind them again for sure. The tapes are made of many different materials, and tape brands are combined on one reel. And here you see clearly the different preservation conditions of the different tape materials. At the left edge, you see that some material has already aged more heavily than this darker red part of the material. It's very interesting. The polyester tapes physically or chemically suffer from physically or chemically caused deformations of the tape back, which leads to bad tape head contact and the risk of stickiness. The tapes based on acetate suffer from the so-called vinegar syndrome, and this causes brittleness, deformations, curled and deformed edges, bad tape head contact, and it looks like this before and after treatment, like this. So the special problem is to capture the metadata. The tapes comprise a unique richness of very specific and very special metadata. Oskar Sala used his tapes quasi as a notebook, as a physical notebook. They have become artworks themselves. They are so beautifully designed. Yeah? After digitization, the tape will never look the same as before. So the challenge is to find a compromise between optimizing physical long-term storage, digital availability of all information, and keeping the original condition traceable. So here I give you some impressions of his tapes. Some more. Oh, the first metadata come along. More. Even more. And metadata. And metadata. And even more nicely designed metadata. Yes, you see how he... this is really a piece of artwork, don't you think so? So, another kind of metadata. And metadata. And metadata. So here you see a deformation of the tape pack, and you see the use of different tape brands and materials, and you see the typical time marker, and he usually used the back coat of an adhesive bandage, Hansa Blast, but the old Hansa Blast ones. And these are the paper time markers in detail. They also look very nice. And you see a sort of deformation from the tape material caused by the time marker. But there are some other metadata. He wrote manual notes on the separation tapes. And some of them are easy to read, but some are less readable. But the manual notes are crucial for the identification of the tapes. The contents of the notes are the basis link to all other metadata, because his audio tapes were his written notebook and his acoustic notebook. So the manual capturing of this metadata is extremely time-consuming and needs interpretation that might change due to future better knowledge of the whole collection. So other things is that he put on some individual markings on the tape, yeah, like you see here. And to make it a little more complicated, he manipulated the tapes very heavily. He turned the oxide layer to the technically wrong side to achieve certain musical effects, a damped and mystical sounds. Here you see the shift of the oxide layer. And this he did for only short parts or then for longer parts. You will see it later on in the video. Another very nice thing is that he used not only the backside of the tapes, but also the oxide layer to manipulate his sounds. He placed specially cut splicing tapes on the oxide layer to achieve certain special effects like a crossfade or a fade out or something like this. So this is audible. And another kind of metadata, is this Sala's hair maybe? So a genetic analysis could find out. He did a lot of different manipulations of the signal. He experimented with spatial sound impression, with phasing, with waveforms, with distortions, white and colored noise, reverting parts, and so on and so on. And I am sure there will be many surprises following. So let's listen to one of these examples. Oh. Thank you. So I think you recognize the bird somehow. So now how to safeguard the specific metadata. One idea is to take photos of the tapes in the original condition. This is urgently necessary. And the second thing is to capture the position of the paper time markers as markers in the digital sound file. This has to be done manually while rewinding the tape. So you have to mark the position 3 minutes 58, 38 centimeters rewinding speed, for example. And the paper markers should be collected separately because they are the originals. Then the splices, the separation tapes, the labels and the markers on the tape should be captured as markers in the sound file. In a bad case, this looks like this. Yeah? 200 or many more markers of different events happening in one tape. So these are mostly splices and notes, manual notes. And another idea to make this available also for future research is the videographic capturing of the notes, splices and manipulations of this collection. And the challenges are for sure the format. There should be high resolution and low compression artifacts. And the lighting of the tapes without heating and destroying them. Because if you heat them up, then the brittle acetate tapes will suffer. So one idea is to have high definition video recording, H.264 MPEG-4, with a resolution of 1280 to 720 pixels and 50 frames, which gives a very nice resolution. And the use of studio panel lights in daylight quality. In this case, we made experiments with 750 white fluorescent tubes with daylight quality. So I would now finally show you two or maybe three examples, depending on the time, very short ones. Or maybe the Grusel Blues is a little longer because it's such a nice example. The Grusel Blues is something, it means something like creeping out blues. It's not a Sala composition, but he created the sound effects. And he, what you will see on the video now are markings with white color, splices, and the change of the oxide layer side. And now, hopefully, please enjoy the Grusel Blues.
Agatha!
Agatha! Lass das Morgen sein!
Agatha, die hat Fantasie, zum Cocktail nimmt sie Gin. Ne Spurstrichnin vergisst sie nie, auch Veronal ist drin. Schenk diesen Hitch-Cocktail sie ein, sind alle tot, die kamen.
Agatha, lass das Morgen sein, es schämt sich nicht für Damen.
Das ist der Gruselblut.
Das ist der Gruselblut.
Es fehlt der linke Fuß und dann das rechte Bein.
Das ist der Gruselblues, wo jeden grusen muss. Agatha!
Agatha! Lass das Morgen sein!
Es heult der Wind, es knarrt die Tür, der Drache fletscht die Zähne. Agatha wird jetzt zum Vampir, denn heute hat sie Migräne. 10 Freunde lud sie zu sich ein, nur 2 davon entkamen.
Agatha, lass das Morgen sein, es schickt sich nicht für Damen.
Das ist der Gruselblues.
Das ist der Gruselblues.
Der Sarg ist viel zu eng, die Leichen schreien.
Das ist der Gruselblues, wo jede gruseln muss. Agatha!
Agatha, lass das Morgen sein.
So I stop here now. I hope you got an impression about the Grusel Blues and about what happens. Another very interesting example of his work is an example for manipulation of the human voice. He anticipated computer and robot voices already in the 1950s. And what you see here is a heavy manipulation of a tape. You will listen to the words cacao, cacadu, cacao, cacadu, ici Mars, carué. It's a film about production of cacao in Africa. So let's have a look what he did. He again positioned splicing tapes on the oxide layer to get a special effect, and it sounds, the audio sounds like this. Yeah, and to have all of this documented, the video should be done from both sides, yeah, because it's interesting what happens in the audio part, and it's interesting what happens on the oxide layer. So I will only show you the oxide layer manipulations on the video. Oh, okay. I will not. Oh, yes, I will. So this is like it, as it looks like, yeah? So you have seen passing by all these manipulations. Yes, and maybe in the very end, a very short example where you can see something about his idea about tape speed. I hope I find him. Again, turn off the oxide layer. Boring here. It's going on. And so on and so on. You see, speed is a wide variety of possibilities, and it is really not always easy to find out what he wanted. So, I have come now to the end of my presentation, and I thank you for your attention, although it's that early in the morning. So, and I'm free for your questions.
Thank you. An exceptional work. However, would you agree that there is this intervention? Me watching this, you know, seems like it's enhancing. There's a rhythm enhancement. If you move your head away, you don't get the rhythm enhancement.
Yes,
there's a rhythm enhancement. It's almost like a... Sorry about this term. Music video. It's enhancement of the rhythm of the audio by watching the video.
An enhancement.
Enhancement, yes.
I did not really understand.
It's perpetuates the rhythm.
Yes.
Of the audio.
Yes.
This is an audio project. Do you agree?
You see, for example, how he worked. He worked in time and in rhythm, and you can clearly see when he cut. And it's some parts are extremely rhythmically manipulated. Yeah, you have, especially sometimes tapes run with 76 centimeters, and it goes like this.
Sure.
One cut it.
Yes, I know. This is not a criticism. I'm just putting it forward as possibly as devil's advocate that this is, you know, an intervention that he might not have agreed with, possibly.
Sorry, who?
He might not have agreed with it.
Yes.
You think he would have done?
I would agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll let.
Nadia, you showed a very ugly acetate tape. And then you showed a very beautiful acetate tape, which you said was the same one after treatment.
Yes.
What was the treatment?
Well, come to the phonogram archive. No. Most acetate tapes are already nicely refreshed. If you rewind them several times, then the air is circulating. The mechanical stress of the winding of the tape flattens the tape somehow, and ideally you rewind it several times, let it rest a little for some days maybe on one side, rewind it again very slowly to the other side, two or three or five times, and then you can, then it's nicely prepared. Thanks.
Nadia, a question. How do you link the video capture of the tape's transport to the audio files?
Yes, this is a problem, as you know. I was looking for a software doing this. No, we fed the audio sound to the video camera so that we have both in time. Yeah. So we were recording audio and video at the same time. So this is synchronous, but you cannot extract the metadata from the video automatically to the file. This has to be done manually. This means that one person doing the digitization has to concentrate as long as the tape runs. And they have a big video screen where you see the tape passing. And whenever a splice comes again, you set the marker manually. This is the only way. I tried to find some producer of a video software, but this would have cost such a lot of development to find out all his manual writings and the different manual style of his or styles of his markers, that this would be an endless project. Also financially.
Richard Wright, BBC. This rotating forehead device for adjusting time, I'm sure, predates 1955. If you look under the name Grant Fairbanks, you'll see use of that device probably 3 or 4 years earlier.
Yes, this is the Eltro is even older, and it was described by Springer later, and Springer produced a very famous device which was widely used, and with the one you were mentioning. Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Nadia, for a different kind of music video.